Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am your host, Jason Verlinde. As always, that is John Rauhouse playing in the background. Thank you so much for tuning in. This episode is a good one, folks. Our first interview from the 2023 Fretboard Summit that I'm sharing, Jorma Kaukonen. Jorma probably needs no introduction to most folks listening to this podcast. Jefferson Airplane, Hot Tuna, Fur Piece Ranch, he's done it all. If you want to hear more about Jorma and his life, a couple of tips. He's got a great blog and website where he's sharing all sorts of great stories. And then, perhaps best of all, he wrote a memoir a couple years ago that is just beautiful and filled with all sorts of great tales. You should go check that out. We did our interview from Old Town School of Folk Music's Maurer Hall, where Jorma would headline later in the day on the Friday of the 2023 Fretboard Summit. We fielded some questions from some of his fans. I asked him about Water Song and his guitars. In one of the many, many great moments of synchronicity at the summit, I thought Jorma was primarily playing Martin acoustic still. He's actually playing Flamenco guitars, and David Flamenco, the luthier, was in the audience and exhibiting at the summit. All these cool little moments happened at the summit, and our next summit is taking place August 22nd to 24th, 2024. Once again at Chicago's Old Town School of Folk Music. For those of you who don't know, we now have a Patreon for this podcast. Patreon.com/fretboard_journal is a way to get all these shows ad-free, support what I do, as well as get some cool bonus content that you will only find on our Patreon. I'll include a link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out. We also have a few sponsors to this podcast. First up is our friends at iZotope. iZotope just released Ozone 11 and Nectar. If you do any multi-track recording, Ozone 11 will help make those tracks come to life, and Nectar 4 will let your vocals really pop out and you can do all sorts of cool magic with them. You can learn more about their software at iZotope.com, and you can still get 10% off with the discount code FRET10 when you check out. Our friends at Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar can be found at mmguitarbar.com or right here in Seattle, Washington, where I am speaking from. They've got all sorts of vintage Martins in stock right now, a 66 D28, a 1996 D45. They've got Gibsons, they've got acoustics, electrics, you name it. It is one of my favorite vintage stores, and you should be following them on Instagram if you aren't yet. Again, it's mmguitarbar.com. Our friends at Peghead Nation are once again sponsoring the show. You can use the discount code FRETBOARD on Peghead Nation and get your first month free or $20 off of an annual subscription. They just launched a Maybell Carter style guitar class with Kathy Fink. Matt Munasteri's got a Western swing class. So many of our favorite players end up teaching at Peghead Nation. It's really a beautiful thing. So go to pegheadnation.com, tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. And last but not least, Stringjoy Strings. You can still get 10% off of your first order at stringjoy.com. Now that the summit has wound down, my focus is on the Fretboard Journal's 50-30 issue. It's going to be a great one. I can't wait for you all to see it. I did a huge interview with Ben Harper about his new record, his instruments, and so much more. And we have a lot of surprises in there. So if you haven't joined us yet, fretboardjournal.com, click on that subscribe button. It helps power this show and everything else that we do around these parts. And now here is my interview with the legend himself, Jorma Kaukonen. We cover a lot of ground in a short amount of time. I hope you enjoy it.
We have lots of your fans here, Jorma.
God bless them, each and every one.
Just as a show of hands, how many of you have been to Fur Piece? I'm just curious. What?
Oh, oh.
Half, almost half. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for being at the Fretboard Summit.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
You guys are you're playing tonight?
I am.
Let's just start with this. You're playing a gig here in Chicago. What guitar do you bring?
So that's a good question, especially on a weekend like this. I played a lot of guitars over the years. I played the Jorma Martin for a number of years. I'm playing a David Flamenco J35 for the last 4 or 5 years now. No, I didn't get rid of the Martins. They come out every now and then, mm-hmm. but my aging hands like the short scale a little better these days.
Okay. He's here.
David's here?
He's right there.
David.
Yeah. I knew you were here. I didn't know you were here.
I don't have my glasses on. Thanks for raising your hand. Yeah, that guy.
That guy.
Yeah.
And let's just get into
Actually, I have four of his guitars now. Wow. So how'd that happen?
Yeah, how did that happen? How did you connect with David?
That's actually a great story. So we're at the Fur Peach Ranch, and there was one of our students came down from Canada, and he had one of Dave's J35s. And I'm sitting, I didn't have my glasses on. You guys are sort of a nice, soft-focused psychedelic haze. And I looked at this thing, and it looked like a J50. I said, let me see that thing. And I played it, and I'm not that kind of guy normally, but it was an out-of-body experience. It reminded me when I played my first J50 in 1959. I flipped out. And then I thought it was a Gibson. I looked at the peg head. I saw this little F thing. What is that? So my friend Tom Feldman, you know, he said, I know what that is. And make a long story short, I called Dave up. We started talking. And before he knew it, I had two J35s and a couple of other neat ones, too.
Did you have particular specs or desires with the J35 copies? Or
no, not really. You know, as far as actually using gear and stuff like that, I don't really design my stuff. I like to get something I like and then find out what it has to give me and then make the most out of that. So I never suggested anything. I said, I like your guitars. I got to have one.
Yeah. You, there's so many things we need to talk about, but you are about to go on, what is it officially called? The Gone Fishing?
Yeah. The going fishing.
I screwed it up. Sorry.
Going fishing.
Yeah.
So I think we're putting the electric thing to bed for a while. And there's a lot of reasons for that. To be honest with you, you know, over the last number of years, you know, I've got a bunch of electric gear, of course. You know, I'm a guitar player, but I never mess with my electric stuff except when I've got gigs coming up, and then I try to put together what I'm going to need. It's just not part of my daily life. Not true about acoustic guitars. They're a part of my daily life. Anyway, to make a long story short, I love playing. We love doing all the stuff that we do, but it's just not as close to my heart. And to be honest with you, I'm going to be 83 this year. Time's marching on. That's just the deal.
Yeah. So not a farewell tour. You're just putting the electric stuff to bed.
No, it's not a farewell tour. Yeah. I'm certainly not going to quit playing acoustic. And again, you know, I don't see anything really coming up in the future after this tour. But again, as I said, it's going fishing, not gone fishing. Mm-hmm. So,
I messed it up. Oh, you did. How often do you and Jack talk?
Oh, we talk all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, he was just on this RV trip recently. He was getting some amp work done in Northern California, and because he's that guy, you know, he's the fittest guy that I know. He really is. I mean, and he insists on sharing every second of his workout and walking and stuff like that. So the answer is, I know what he's done every minute of every day for years.
Well. Speaking of knowledge sharing, you have this incredible, I guess it's kind of old school to say it, but it's a blog on your website where you talk.
Right.
I mean, what is that, two or three times a week?
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
And it's more interesting sometimes than others. Sometimes it's just like, of course, I'll do a special one for the Old Town School. Wow, I played. I mean, sometimes it's just like I played such and such, and there's a set list, and sometimes something moves me to weigh in.
But I mean, it's super prolific, and if anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, his website. I mean,
it's free.
It's free, but there's just incredible writing, reflections on sets, and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Is that almost part of like that artist's way, where you're like, I'm going to write or type three pages every day, or do you have to discipline yourself, or is it just part of your routine?
No, when I wrote my autobiography a couple of years ago, I had to discipline myself. That's work. Journaling and blogging, that's really a lot of fun. Again, sometimes it's more interesting than others, and sometimes I go, you know, I haven't weighed in for a while. We just updated our website, and it's taken me a couple of weeks to learn how it works. I'm really slow with that shit, so it's been hard to load pictures and stuff, you know, and all this stuff, you know. But yeah, it's fun to do. I get to ramble on, and you know, like Roy Bookbinder says, you know, I get to play guitar and talk about myself. I can't do that at home, so it's okay.
And you have a couple remote Fur Peace projects going on, right?
Sure. So we're not doing any more in-person things right now. There's a lot of reasons. I'm not going to whine about the pandemic because we've all got sob stories about that. But we're doing a bunch of stuff. We're doing, hang on a sec. Let me kill this thing here. It's just my wife. I'll call you back later, dear. yeah. So we did some stuff in Martha's Vineyard this year. We're doing it again next year. We're going to be in San Diego next year. So we're doing a lot of what we like to call offsites. Oh, we're going to be in Sanibel Island in Florida. Mm-hmm. If they finish rebuilding it, then.
Do you want to bring Fur Peace back to where you have campers?
I don't know. The answer is we really don't know right now. We're just waiting to see. We're still doing shows. We have our little theater there and we're doing a bunch of shows and every now and then we do stuff, but we're not doing camps per se right now.
Okay.
We are doing online stuff though.
You are prolific. You are amazing. For this electric tour, what are you bringing out?
Oh, this is the right place for that conversation. So I'm bringing out a 91 Firebird.
Okay.
And I do have RS caps and pots and Myron. Is Myron here somewhere? Lendy Fralin pickups. Thank you, Myron. Yeah, right. And I do have a custom shop, Les Paul Beano, that Susan Tedeschi turned on to. I might bring one of my tricked out jazz masters that Dave Spector, your own Dave Spector, turned me on to for the electric stuff. And then for the finger picking stuff, years ago, I was really fortunate to get a custom shop, a Chet Atkins SST. Mm-hmm. I've got four of them, but that one is really the best of the four. Mm-hmm. And it just really allows me to, you know, they sort of like pushed it as being it's not an acoustic guitar. It's an electric guitar, but you can put heavy gauge strings on it. You can finger pick and do a mm-hmm. bunch of stuff.
Did you ever go down the Alembic hole?
I never did. Jack did, of course. He was in the beginning. Again, you know, that would have required some kind of architectural thought on my part about what I really wanted. I mean, like one of my buddies, like recently, he got some custom guitar and it had, I mean, it was like the flight deck of the Enterprise, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, listen, we all get to play with whatever we get to play with. And I'm not critical of that, but it's just too much thinking involved, mm-hmm. you know. You know, three knobs on a Strat, four knobs on most Gibson. I'm done. That's all I need.
Simple amps?
Pretty much. I mean, all of us use pedals these days. On this tour, the tour coming up, I do have a – Myron, is it a 62 or a 63?
The Pro.
So Jack, Jack's a bass player. I don't know why he wound up with a 63 Pro, but he gave it to me for a couple of years ago. Single 15, very rare. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the SST amp, and I'm using a Louis Electric. It's sort of like a souped-up deluxe for the electric guitar. I do have a 67 Marshall Plexi, but it's just too loud for what we're doing these days. Might be for sale soon. We could talk.
Okay. Yeah. We have a lot of amp fiends in this building
now. Know you do. I know you do.
I mean, don't you feel like you should take it out for one victory lap on this final?
We might just have to have it on stage with a spotlight on it.
Who has questions here? All right. Go ahead.
David Foster. I just wanted to say hello to you from a couple of friends of mine, Marty Brennan and Rich Petchkovsky. And Rich, I saw Rich the other day, and I said, oh, won't you write something down, a little note, and I'll give it to you on the board. He said, just tell him I said hello.
Well, back at him, and he mentioned this old friend of mine, Marty Brennan. He was friends with this Ian Buchanan, who's the guy that taught me to play fingerstyle guitar. We're going way back. We might have to talk.
I love it. Oh, go ahead.
Similar opening. I'm taking some lessons from a guy who studied with you in Palo Alto very, very many years ago.
Wow.
Named Steve Kritzer. I don't know if you remember it. But my question was, you taught for a while, then you were performing some then, but then it was performance?
Yeah, pretty much.
Then you got back into teaching. What was that transition?
So story of the teaching thing is kind of funny, actually. When I moved to California in 62, you know, I was just starting to play out and stuff, but I'd never really gotten paid to play a gig yet at that time. And I met Paul Kantner, who had dropped out of the school that I was going to at the time, and he was teaching at this little music store in Stevens Creek Road in San Jose, and just trying to figure out something to do. And I remember Paul said to me, why don't you teach? I'm going, what would I teach? He said, how about something you know? That seemed like a pretty good idea. So I started to teach guitar. This time we had a ladder. We went down this little hole in the basement, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But in any case, and I discovered that I really liked it. There was just something about it, you know. I think one of the things was the social aspects of people that wanted to learn to play fingerstyle guitar. And it just started out doing that. And then for many years, I didn't do it for a while. And then when I got back into it, I really enjoyed it. And then hanging out with a lot of guys that have been teaching way longer than me, like Woody Mann and stuff like that, I just learned so much about teaching. And it's made me a better player, no question about it. And I love sharing all that stuff.
Fingerstyle is one thing. You teach all sorts. You've taught all sorts of stuff at Fur Piece. Which ones have been, as the teacher, sort of the most transformative when you watch the students? Is it the songwriting or the?
Well, songwriting is always interesting because it's so magical. Yeah. You know, and that would then we're not talking, but then we're not geeking out about guitar playing and stuff. But gosh, you know, one of the things that comes to mind just in this conversation is watching Steve James, may he rest in peace. I mean, he was just one of the really good ones. And he was such a heavy cat. And he was able to explain all this to me, because I don't play slide guitar on any level. Was just demystifying. This was like, whoa, that's like incredible.
Yeah. So cool. Oh, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the typewriter tapes?
Sure. Yes. So that's a funny thing, too. So you got to remember, me and Janice were kids back then. I mean, nobody had any idea that anything was going to go anywhere. I met her the first weekend that I moved to California, and we went to Hoot Nanny, aka Open Mic. And she didn't have a guitar player, and we kind of knew that. I kind of knew the same stuff, so we became friends. In any case, so I got a chance whenever she would come down the peninsula, because I lived in San Jose, and if she needed somebody to accompany her, or Palo Alto, then I would do that. So she had a bunch of guys like me scattered around the Bay Area. In any case, we were doing, she got a gig to do a benefit of some sort at the Coffee Gallery on Grant Street in San Francisco, and she wanted me to play with her. And she'd come down to rehearse to San Jose, and my ex-wife, may she rest in peace, was Swedish, and she was typing a letter home. Interesting stuff, you know, but the good news, the other thing was I just bought a tape recorder, mono. They didn't have stereo tape recorders then, so we taped everything. Anyway, that's how that happened. The good news was is that when the time came, the tapes were still there. And since you mentioned tapes, because some of these are going to come out, in 1960, when I'd been playing fingerstyle guitar for about 4 months, my dad was in the service and he was stationed in the Philippines. And I went back there for a while. And before I did, I stopped off in DC and I visited my buddy Jack. And I was showing him what Ian had been teaching me. And he taped all that stuff. And he saved all those tapes. And we just baked them and stuff like that. And we are going to release them. My only comment was, I'd only been playing for 4 months. I was pretty good for a kid. Anyway, Jack. That's the same Jack that documents every move that he makes. You know?
Yeah. Well, since we're going down the recording topic thing, can we talk about Water Song and the origin of that?
Sure. What do you want to know?
Give us the whole story. When did you write that and where were you at in life? Okay. And how long did it take you?
It took me probably almost no time at all, because it's one of those things that just came. I don't really, I occasionally write in tunings, but I don't play in tunings. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember exactly, but I'd probably just been messing around with the G tuning, which Water Song is in. And it just seemed to make sense. Again, because we have a room full of guitar players here, we need to go down this rabbit hole briefly. So I should have brought the guitar up here. But anyway, so those are not triplets. Those are 4 3-note figures and 2 couplets. So those are 16th notes. It's in 4. Anyway, just throwing
we
that out.
We need a guitar. Who's got a guitar here?
I'll bet
there's one right there.
Well, then we'd have to put it to tuning. We could be here all day.
Okay. Okay. Was that noodling? Was that you trying to express a story through song?
I mean, in a way it was noodling. And it just, the reason it's called Water Song, it just sounded like that's what it should be called. In the recorded version, because basically it's just, there's just one like section to the song.
Yeah.
And with Sammy Piazza, who was our drummer at the time, is playing kettle drums. And Jack was, you know, in the recorded version, the stuff Jack does makes it a more broader spectrum song. When I do it, it's, you know, I try to inflect it differently, but pretty much it's the same thing three times through.
I mean, don't sell it short. It's one of the most beautiful instrumentals ever written.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I mean, that is the other interesting thing about you and you and Jack is like, is very rare for a fingerstyle acoustic or a fingerstyle guitar song to be accentuated by a bass and for it to work.
Yeah. Well, he's such, you know, I mean, I'll toot his horn for him here. I think he's arguably, listen, there's a lot of great bass players, but Jack is a great musician. He's not just a bass player. And the way he thinks about harmony and melody and stuff like that is very interesting. You know, like he listened to a lot of Scotty LaFaro when he was a kid and stuff like that. He's listened to a lot of melodic jazz stuff and a lot of classical music stuff too. And it comes out in his playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure does. Did we have another question over here? I thought I saw a hand. No? No? Okay. Oh, go.
Sir.
Bruce.
My favorite Jefferson Airplane song you didn't play on.
Which one? Oh, Today?
Nope.
Rejoice. Oh, with, pardon?
Rejoice.
Oh, yeah, right.
Do you have any memories of that?
I do not. It was in my defense, it was the late 60s. I remember listening to the Rushes when we were mixing it, but yeah. I mean, that was the interesting thing about the Airplane as a band. You know, we argued about a lot of business stuff, but we never argued about music, which was really cool. So whatever somebody wanted to do something, whatever they wanted to do, it was okay.
Yep, glad that one made it.
Was that all recorded with the Fender Twin? Did I read that?
That's a good question. When we did Baxter's, here's a geeky thing too.
Sure.
Somebody to Love and White Rabbit. What kind of guitar and amp do you think was played through for those songs?
Do we have any guesses?
Guild amp.
Standale Super Imperial.
Yeah.
Wow.
Solid state. Why did I get that? Because the Lovin' Spoonful had them. And okay. I remember I was hanging out with one of the guys and we were talking about that. And I told the story and he said, we hated those amps. We had to play them because we were endorsers. I'm going, well, I got a decent sound for those two songs, so that's okay. Yeah, the Thunderbird. Little guitar stand in the back. Remember, you could stand it up. Popped out.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
There almost seemed to be a tendency to, like, play with the same high-powered amps in the studio that you would use for, like, a concert stage. Nobody did, like, now guys take Champs into a studio.
Right. Well, when we first started recording, you got to remember that the Airplane Takes Off album, three tracks, and it only had three tracks so they could ping pong them.
Mm-hmm.
No noise reduction, so you couldn't do a lot of overdubs. Sir Ernest Capello, four tracks, no noise reduction. All those big amps, I mean, the Standells were like, whoa, look at that thing. It's almost as tall as I am. I mean, we just didn't have all that stuff in the world that I moved in at that time.
Yeah.
So when we started out, when I first started playing with the Airplane, I had it was a very early 60s Princeton.
Yeah.
And then wish I still had that one, but oh well. Anyway, yeah.
And the Rickenbacker.
I started out with the Rickenbacker. Why? Cantor made me get that thing. McGuinn had it. I had to get it. And when I did use it on the first album. It just wasn't my thing, but I remember, are there any parents here? No, anyways. When Cream first came to town, I saw him at the Fillmore. Me and my buddies, we dropped acid before we went to the show. And I remember at the time thinking that the Clapton was about 20 feet tall. I met him later on. He's not 20 feet tall. But anyway, I flipped out. I went back to my apartment and I took that Rickenbacker and I threw it like a spear through the wall. That was the bad news. The good news was it was very well built, didn't do anything. So I traded it in for another guitar.
Was there a hand over here? Yeah, go ahead.
I just got to say, when I went to college, I hadn't really heard much finger style music before that. I grew up, you know, small town rock and roll.
Sure.
Anyhow, teacher played me some things. Next thing you know, I signed up for lessons, and one of the early teams was at the auditor.
Yeah.
I just, you know, that's how far back it goes. I'll tell you all about it.
Kids, go figure. So Embryonic Journey, I had just, there was a guy, he's long since passed away, named Roger Perkins, and he and his partner, Larry Hanks, who I believe is still alive, came to the Folk Theater in the San Jose, and they played Good Shepherd. That's where I learned Good Shepherd from, and he did it with Drop D. And so he showed me this Drop D, and of course I flipped out. So it was something really new to me, and I was doing a workshop at the University of Santa Clara right after I graduated college too. Right after they let me go, that's another story unto itself. What they dusted me out the door, and I was just messing around with that. And this friend of mine said, "You should turn that into a song," and I did.
That's awesome. Oh yeah, go ahead.
You studied under Reverend Gary Davis.
I beg your pardon?
You studied under Reverend Gary.
I did not. Reverend Davis. I don't even know why I did. Well, when I first got turned on to him, I was living in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and Reverend doesn't live in Yellow Springs, Ohio. But when I moved to New York, I worked in this spinal cord damage hospital that on a co-op job from Antioch. And my buddy Ian had taught me. He was friends with the Reverend. He knew him well. So I had a chance to watch him play and stuff like that. But unlike some of the other guys that really got under the Reverend's skin, it's just the two-finger thing just didn't make sense to me. So I've learned and continue to learn tons of stuff from the great music that the Reverend played, but I'm not a really Reverend-style player. Yeah.
Say anything? No? What's up? Oh, yeah. Oh, way up there. You can't see these stage lights.
I beg your pardon? Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. There's a difference between practicing and playing. When I'm home, there's never a day that goes by that I don't play the guitar, for an extended period of time. But I don't practice every day. When I'm getting ready to go out on the road and stuff like that, then I settle down and then I go back to what I did my practice when I was younger, where you're doing things slowly. Yeah. It's almost like a Tai Chi thing where you just study the moves and all this kind of stuff. So the answer is not every day except when it counts.
And what about
songwriting? Which is like for today.
What about songwriting?
I teach songwriting classes and I think I'm pretty good at it because I make the people in the class write songs. Uh-huh. And if I followed my own advice, I would have written thousands of songs. But I usually wait for something to kick me in the ass. You know, usually it's a guitar thing, and maybe a line will come.
Okay.
And once that happens, because I'm good with words, then I follow down the rabbit hole, and mm-hmm. if it comes out the way I like it, then you guys get to hear it, and if not, I mm-hmm. make sure that nobody hears it.
To you mentioned four Flamingo guitars in your quiver.
Four.
He should know.
Yeah, he knows.
Is there one where the songs tend to flow out a little more than the others?
Well, David, I haven't finished writing a song with this. David made me, how would you characterize the big boy, David? He made me this thing. It's not quite a J200, but it's a really big guitar. And when you play, catch that second, the B note, second fret of the fifth string, and do a double stop with the open sixth string. Yeah. I could hit those things. You could go out and go to the bathroom and come back, and it would still be ringing by the time you came back. This thing is unbelievable. In fact, I don't know if I should say this in a mixed audience, but I'm going to, because that's the kind of, my wife says I should keep my mouth shut, but I'm going to do this anyway. So Ed Gearhart, you know, Ed Gearhart is very, very artful player. He looks sort of saintly, but he has the foulest mouth of anybody I've ever met.
Okay.
So he would say about that guitar, it's like a cross between a lap dance and a high colonic.
Oh, wow.
And that's a good thing. It's not a bad
thing. That's a good thing. Okay, yeah. Is there one of those at your table? Okay. So just a colonic.
Wait, what kind of wood did you say again, David? Did I hear the word rosewood? Yeah, but a man needs mahogany too. A man needs both. The 35s are mahogany, the way they were meant to be.
But it's a big guitar.
The one we're talking
about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's really big, yeah. It's like one of these things that if you have shoulder joint problems after a while.
So the move away from Martin's is the scale, not the body?
It's the other thing, too, is like, you know, if you only need one guitar. But if you're a lucky guy like me, well, then you run across them, then you can actually have more than one. Mm-hmm. The Martin guitars have a thing.
Yeah.
They have a thing, and that's their thing. And I like the 4-0 size guitars. I've got a number of them. I wound up giving one to my son and one to my daughter, but I've got two left myself, and I'm not getting rid of them because I like them, you know. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I'll probably bring them out on the road again, but not today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you still have the Gibson J50?
Yes, I still do. It, strangely enough, after all these years, I still have it, and it's still a great guitar.
Incredible.
Not as pretty as it once was, but it has a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, hang on to that thought for a sec. I paid $100 for that guitar.
Wow.
In Dayton, Ohio, at Pop's Music Store in the late 59, early 60, and it was worth every penny.
Yeah.
I was listening to a discussion here yesterday. They were talking about guitars really like opening up, even old ones, as you play them more.
Absolutely.
Do you find with yours that they sit in the case for a while that you got to open
Absolutely. Them up? Absolutely. And they have somebody gave me one of these gadgets that, Myron, what's the gadget called? Yeah, I've got a tone right. It came out of the box once. I know they work, but then I'd have to like hang the guitar up, and I've got a big dog. He'd knock it over, you know. But yeah, absolutely, no question about it. They need love.
I was talking to Neil Young's guitar tech at one point, and he was saying that he would take them out of the case if they'd been sitting for a while. The first thing he would do is shake them. I don't know if that did anything for
him. I'm not sure either, but it's a good story.
Yeah, exactly.
And plus, I can see Neil doing it, so.
Oh, yeah, way back there.
Nora, when we did that online workshop for the school, you talked a little bit about you as a younger person, what the Old Town School kind of meant for you. And I wonder, since we're here, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, sure. So when I was in Antioch in 1959 and 60, the Old Town School of Folk Music, it truly, I mean, I've used this word many times, but I've written about it, but it was a mecca for all of us that love that kind of music. And the only reason I didn't do it is I just didn't have the money to make the trip from Yellow Springs to Chicago. But many of my friends did, and it was just one of those legendary things. You know, you read about it, you hear about it, and you know, even though this is not the original building, it's still the Old Town School of Folk Music, which is pretty darn cool. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I should probably know this already, but what's the status of your purpose?
Well, we talked about that.
Yeah, so we're not doing in-person classes right now. Again, I'm not going to go on the COVID complaint, you know, a litany of complaints. So we're just not doing that right now. We are still doing shows. We have a theater, doing a lot of online stuff, doing some on the road stuff. And the answer is, I'm not sure. It's a work in progress.
Do you have your set list for tonight figured out?
I do.
You do?
But it's only a general guideline.
Okay.
You know, it's like, you know, people come to shows here, actually come to listen to music.
Yeah.
But, you know, a gig's a gig, and I play bars a lot, still play bars too. And so I'm probably not going to really exhibit the softer side of Yorm in a noisy bar room. You never know, though.
What bars are you playing at these days?
It's been a while. but you know, again, you never know. Hey, speaking of that, well, I was just talking to my buddy Myron, the Cubby Bear. You know the Cubby Bear, of course. You've been to the Cubby Bear?
No. What's the Cubby Bear?
Thank you very much.
I'm not from here. I'm from Seattle.
Okay, so
I'm visiting.
All right. Well, you get a pass on that one. So I was doing the Cubby Bear with Robert Hunter in the 80s.
Wow. All right, let's hear this story.
It's a great story. And you know, and we're playing, And I was playing Janis, "The time has come for us to pause." And from the audience, one of my delicate, sensitive fans, "Play the blues, motherfucker." The Cubby Bear.
So that's why you love Old Town. There was a question over there. Yeah.
You talked about some of the guitars, but
I used a 345 with the airplane for a number of years, and when we got the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, the custom shop and given replicate my 64 had been gone for many years. They replicated this guitar so that when they gave it to me, it actually in my memory felt like that guitar. So yeah, I use that periodically. The thing about the stereo is, because it is a stereo, you either need two amps and blah blah blah, but I do love that 345. It's a cool guitar. And then the whammy bar, the question, doesn't that thing throw your guitar out of tune? The answer is, of course it does. That's part of its charm. You know, probably, but I never did. I did put the metal saddles in, but, you know. It required too much intellectual activity on my part.
go ahead.
So you've played with a lot of people in a lot of places over the years. Thinking back on that, who or what inspires you the most today?
Looking back at the history of what we've done. Wow, that's a good question. And it's almost impossible to answer. I guess it would just depend on what bubbled to the surface of my mind. I've been very fortunate. I get a chance to have musical conversations with a lot of people. And, you know, it's one of these things where the whole is always greater than the sum of the parts. So I don't have the answer you're looking for, but it happens all the time.
Love it. Any other questions? Well, we have, yeah.
Jorma, what's the best show you've seen in the last couple of years?
The best show. Steve Earle, last year in Marietta, Ohio.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. What a killer band he had last year.
Any more questions?
I guess just following up on that, what are some of the most memorable shows you've performed over the years?
Wow. I think right off the top of my head today is we did a sort of a Jefferson Airplane retrospective at Lockett in 2015, and we had a killer band together for that. Rachel Price, G. Smith, bunch of folks, Larry Campbell, Teresa, my usual gang of suspects, and we had a really darn good time.
Someone just uploaded on YouTube a solo show of yours from some cafe in San Francisco. It's amazing. I can't remember the name. It's like an Italian joint.
Bottom Line.
No, it wasn't the Bottom Line.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Oh, no, because that was with Sally and Barry.
I'll look it up while someone over there had one more question for you.
Many years ago, I ordered some Percy's Ranch. I think it was Homespun Records. Cassette tape, instructional video. With that, there was a entry form to win you and Jack. Backyard bargain.
Still waiting for
you
to come.
You remember that?
Very vaguely. Sounds like one of my wife's plots, but I'm not sure.
The La Cicia Cafe, San Francisco, 1984? No recollection.
Say this again.
There's a bootleg on YouTube set of yours.
Yes, from
La Cicia Chichia Cafe. Nice. It's really good. It's a really good set.
I can barely
remember. Somebody uploaded it 11 days ago. I'm one of 36 people to listen to it.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I didn't know if it was like a legendary boot or not. Yeah.
It is now.
Oh.
I got your hard rock here. It's preserved my hand and wrist function for over 3 years now. So thank you and Purpose. Great storm for that. But, you know, how many other people know about this CDG Yes. So this stuff, it really works. You have the cream, you have the balm, and they all have their uses. But the great thing about this is you can put it on your wrist and your bum, and you don't get greasy. So you can continue to play. You don't have to
wash. Wow. I've got mine with me.
Is that a big operation?
We met this guy, Robbie Bickett from down in Kentucky. Actually, back in the day, he and his brothers had it's all legal now, but yeah. Back in those days, they just used marijuana. One of his brothers just got out of prison for 20 years recently. But anyway, so they moved on and they do this THC thing. Mm-hmm. And again, to be honest, it doesn't work for everybody, but it does work for me. It's good shit. And you're right. You can play the guitar with it, too. That's, yeah.
All right. Is that on your website? Or?
Of course.
Okay.
Go to the Furt Beach Ranch Company store. That would be www. No, you're
fine. All right. Well, thank you, Yorma, for your time. This was my pleasure. Amazing. Obviously, come on out tonight. Ooh. This stage in, 6 hours? I don't know.
Who's counting, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good.
Thanks, everybody.
How many guitars did you bring with you? So I need to tell this story here. David stopped by the Furt Beach Ranch towards the end of the pandemic thing. How many guitars did you have with you then?
Jenny?
15.
Yes, there are quite a few of them. And I will just say, the unpaid testimonial here.
Yeah.
I have played many of his guitars, many of them. I'm probably guessing maybe 25 or 30 over the years that we've known each other. And they don't all speak to me in the same way, but I've never played a dog.
All right.
Check his stuff out.
All right.
Oh, since we're geeking out, we need to say this too. In my humble opinion, nobody does a sunburst better than him.
All right. Yeah. Nice. We did it.
We did.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, that was my first interview of many that I'll be sharing from the Fretboard Summit. Next week, it's Andy Powers talking about the new Powers Electric Company guitars, being interviewed by Josh Scott of JHS Pedals. One of those only at the Fretboard Summit kind of interviews. That's what we specialize in. If you ever want to be my best friend, leave us a review for this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Takes about 30 seconds of your time. And if you ever have any feedback, podcast@fretboardjournal.com is a great way to get a hold of me. Till next time.